Good morning. Welcome each one of you. Desire that Christ would speak to each one of you in whatever you face this morning. I don't want to make anybody feel conspicuous. At the same time, I do very much feel like we need your prayers. I think there was a text sent around last weekend to pray for Ann Merton and the family there, and let's continue to remember to pray for them this week and some of the battles that are faced there. Okay, I'd like to have your help here. I don't know. One thing I've never aspired to that I know I'm not good at is drawing, but I offered somebody that I thought was better than me to do some drawing for me, and they declined, so I did my own the best I could. So maybe before I start, I should make sure you can understand what I tried to draw. Can anybody tell me what they think that is? I mean, I won't be too offended. Reagan? Okay, thanks. So that made it. Can anybody tell me what they think this is over here? Alex? A ship? Boat? Okay. What about these small things? Kyle, you want to try? Okay, well, we're close. They're little lights, yeah. So thanks. I guess probably the best way to explain this, and I'll spend more time on it later, is I think we all know the song, Let the Lower Lights Be Burning, right? And so, of course, like I said, I'll spend more time on it later, but of course we have a lighthouse is very necessary to keep you out from the major things, but also as the ship goes in a channel, usually they have, shall we call, marker lights that they line up that tells them where the safe channel is. So that's my effort at that. So just so you know that I don't have to go in a big description when I get there. So evidently the events of the past couple weeks probably played a role in this message. And there's one or two people here that could possibly feel like I'm preaching this message because of private conversations. And that's not really the case. I'm preaching it for myself. So thank you for inspiring me, is I guess what I'll say, and don't feel singled out at all. So I titled it, I wasn't sure where to go, and then it split into two for me, but I titled it, Called to Do His Will. Called to Do His Will. A couple things, I think, just as a review. Who is the author of confusion? Who loves confusion? Anyone? The devil. So confusion, sometimes we create our own confusion, but confusion as a state is only really enjoyed by our spiritual enemy, the devil. It's not something that God wants to see. It's not something that I would say most people even enjoy long term. Sometimes we experience some of it, but it's not. It's the work of the enemy. Okay? So let's keep some of these things in mind, not necessarily that I'm going to spend a lot of time on them. As you think of God and what he cares about, I have to be careful I say this correctly, but what is God's, it's not that he doesn't care about all things. At the same time, what is God's focus on primarily, would you say, as we think of physical things, as we think of maybe mental, emotional things, and as we think of spiritual things? Which one is, I don't know if I should say more important, but which one is God's primary focus on? Thank you. I would say spiritual, right? How else could you explain books like Job? Or, I mean, we could think of David and the hardship he went through. Maybe things that you've experienced in your life. It's not that God doesn't care about our physical, right? It tells us he sees the lily of the field and how it's dressed. And when it gets cut, he sees the sparrow fall. So God cares about physical. That's not what I'm saying. I'm just saying that sometimes he may touch physical in an effort to teach spiritual. And I think he may sometimes do the same thing in the mental and emotional realm. Okay, one other thing, especially for those of you as parents, the rest of you I think can follow the thought. How many of you that currently have a 4 to 5 year old or have had, that are parents, how many of you would allow that 4 to 5 year old to go out on this road with a bicycle or a tricycle and just play out on the road? Is there any parents that would think that would be a wonderful idea? I don't see any. So could you tell me why you would not do that? I'm asking parents here, not children. Okay, it's dangerous. But now I spend hours and hours on the road, and it's dangerous, right? I mean, and I'm not picking on you, Ernie. I'm just going to pick this thing apart a little bit in general. So is that why? Okay. So now you're bringing it back to the maturity level, the understanding of the individual, right? Some of us, our work involves a good part of on the road. It's not that we don't, that we avoid it just because of the danger, but those of us on the road had better realize that there's some danger there. And you take a 4 or 5 year old, like Johnny said, they have no concept. You put them out in the road and you tell them, well, a semi might come, you know, make sure you get off. I'm sure most of them would be intrigued enough with the surface and the excitement of being out there. They would say, sure, right? But number one, they don't realize the extent of the danger. They don't realize the speed of the danger. And they really, nothing against their mental capacity, but they really have no ability to understand the potential of that danger. Just being aware of the danger isn't enough because, or just being informed of the danger, it has to be along with an understanding. A capacity to comprehend and to see. And that verse, so thinking of that, brings me to a verse in 1 Corinthians chapter 13. If you want to open your Bibles, open them to Jeremiah 29. But 1 Corinthians 13, what we call the chapter on charity, it's interesting, as he winds down that chapter, one of the last verses, I think it's 12, there he says, for now we see through a glass darkly, but then face to face. Now I know in part, but then shall I know even as also I am known. So he's talking about love, charity. And as we think about why I wouldn't send my 4-year-old out to play on the road, it's love. Now, the thing is that if we lived real close to this road, and she would stand there and look at this road and think of how much nicer it would be to ride on than what the yard is and how well it would go. Do you think that potentially to my child, I look like a spoil sport? There's 10 minutes maybe, no traffic. Dad's just a loser. I mean, they probably wouldn't say that. But you know, there's a road. It's smooth. It's fun. It would be fantastic. I could get off. There it is. And Dad says, absolutely not, harsh judgment if you get within 10 feet. Why? Now going back to that verse, for now we see through a glass darkly, but then face to face. Now I know in part, but then shall I know even as also I am known. This verse tells me a couple interesting points, a few things I'd like to consider. Is that there is somebody that completely knows everything about my life and every experience and every challenge, every temptation that's ever come my way. He knows exactly why that was allowed. Me? I don't. If you do, you got a lot further than I did. I am in a very dark glass sometimes. Sometimes that glass seems darker than at other times, granted. But I don't see it. Also, what I see and I think I know, if you were to come to me, there are some things I would be pretty clear on. The reality is that in comparison to God, there's probably even a bigger gap than there is between an adult and a 4-year-old. So we can see clearly why it's dangerous for that 4-year-old to be playing out on a busy highway. Do you think that potentially God sees just as clearly some things that just look all mixed up to me, that look all wrong, maybe even potentially? Can I see myself in that light? What I think myself to know most fully and best, which is, of course, myself, I think God is saying in that verse, I can't even fully realize and understand myself. Because he says, I shall know as I am known. But praise God, there's a time coming when I will see myself and all the things in his will and his plan for me the way he does. And then I think all that confusion, that doubt, the questions leave, because now God's plan is clear. And to me, if there's anything that brings just praise throughout eternity, it's finally having all those things that seemed random, that seemed awful, that seemed maybe so wrong, to find their place and make perfect sense in God's plan. Not in mine, but in His. So in Jeremiah, I don't know that I'm going to read this. I'm going to tell the story a little bit more. But in Jeremiah chapter 29, we have a group of people. We don't know exactly how many. But we have a group of people that it'd be like a bunch of the Mexican army would come up to Arkansas here and grab a third of us and just head out. Take us back to Mexico. And it would be like those that are left, let's say, one of the prophets, one of the people that we thought we appreciated, he would write us a letter telling us some of these next things. So try to put yourself in their shoes. I don't know. My imagination, while I think fairly fine and healthy, sort of runs out of steam on this one. Can you imagine that? Just one day living your life, maybe there was a siege, maybe, I don't know how long that went on. But basically, within a month, let's say, going from living a normal life, feeling fairly secure, to ripped away from everything and almost everybody that you knew, carried 900 miles, I don't know what the equivalent is, if you were going to drive it, it took, the best I could see, I think it took Ezra and the people with him 4 to 5 months to travel this distance back. Now, an army probably moved faster. So let's say somewhere around a month to 5 months. I don't know. Have you ever been on a trip that long? I don't think I have. That's a long trip. Just taken and way, I mean, almost beyond ability to return. So you have this prophet that wasn't part of being taken away, writing this letter to you now in this foreign place. And he says this. Did he tell them to weep, to mourn, to sneak away at night and come back as soon as possible? That's not what he said. He wrote to them and he said this, in my words. He told them to settle down, to build houses, to plant gardens, to enjoy the fruit of their gardens, to get married if they weren't, to have children. And he says, get your children married and have some more children. Increase. He even goes further. He says, be a blessing, be a help, be a profitable person to be around in the setting to the people that are around you. Now, guess what? I don't think this was a popular doctrine because who had taken these people away from home to start with? Likely the people that they were stuck with now, right? And so now they're told, be a good person. I mean, help, encourage them. That's your job there. What a message to send. Be a blessing to your captors. This wasn't all he wrote. He goes on and tells them that God told me to tell you, don't let those claiming to be speaking for me deceive you. Don't let your own hearts, your dreams, your feelings and desires to come back home deceive you into thinking that this is going to happen because it won't. He says, you will be here for 70 years. Now, how many of you take 70, add it to your age, still expect to be living at that age? Probably hardly anyone that can understand the story I'm saying, right? Maybe very few. But in 70 years, if I could drop back in 70 years, I probably would hardly know where I was, right? Think about that. A life sentence. Three generations. You will be there for 70 years before God will allow this process of coming back. And then maybe the strangest part about this whole story to me is the verses I want to read, starting at verse 11. After saying all this, after having experienced all this, God shares this message with them through Jeremiah and says this, verse 11. He says, for I know the thoughts that I think toward you, saith the Lord, thoughts of peace and not of evil, to give you an expected end. Then shall you call upon me, and you shall go and pray unto me, and I will hearken unto you. You shall seek me and find me, when you shall search for me with all your heart, and I will be found of you, saith the Lord. So let's say you were just snatched, grabbed, transported. Everything different. And now you're told that this is going to last for 70 years. And you're supposed to just make the best of it. And then somebody would come tell you, somebody who could have changed the outcome, somebody who could have kept this from happening would come and tell you, "For no, I know the intentions of my heart and the plans that I have for you. My intent is one of goodwill for you. I desire your happiness and blessing. I want to give you a hope-filled future. As you resign yourself to what you face, it will enable you to call upon me in prayer. And I will hear you. When you seek me in submission to what has come into your life and search for me with all your heart, you will find me. I long for you to find me." Wouldn't you say it takes a rather mature person to accept that message? But that's the message God gave Jeremiah for these people. And I think that's the message God gives us today and sometimes in the struggles that we face. You know, as human beings, I would say I at least, and I don't think I may be alone on this, almost we have an unlimited scope for struggling with what God allows. You can almost always find someone somewhere saying, "God, why do I have to go through this? God, why did you allow that to happen? God, why me? God, this is wrong. How can this be allowed in your plan? God, this is never going to work for the good and the right." And like I said, the past, couple weeks, I had to think about this extra much. Like I told you Friday evening before the nominations there, reading out of Psalm 46, and some of the things we face, and the temptations that the devil brings with these experiences, we can feel so like a wave, just in and out, back and forth. Where's the bottom? Where's the base? Where's the peace? Where's rest? So I haven't experienced necessarily personally all these, but as a human being, I can see myself experiencing them. So there likely are some who thought God was going to call them to that work, and yet it didn't materialize. And the question I would have, I'm sure, if I was in those shoes, is something wrong with me, with my walk with God? There likely are some who struggle with being called to do something that they certainly feel they just can't do. I know that was me for a long time. Still is some days. There likely are some who struggle with wondering what's the use of trying to be willing to be used if it's always someone else that is used. There likely are some who struggle with feeling appreciated by the church and useful in the work because they weren't thought of as a suggestion for this work. Or maybe, potentially, there's some of you sitting here who are the fortunate ones, shall we call you that in this case, on whom the last weekend absolutely had no stressful effect whatsoever. And that's great. But you know what I would tell you? If you serve God, sooner or later, you will have a battle of accepting His will and call for you. I don't know where it's going to be, but I think every last true Christian faces this battle in some way, in place and time. So get prepared. You know, what we do when facing a battle tells much more about us than if we had never faced a battle. Oftentimes it would be easy, and I've done this so many times in my life, is, "God, why this battle? I mean, why does this have to be so hard? Why do I have to go through this?" I think there's a number of reasons. I'm not going to list them all, but I think one of the primary reasons is that God, in my case, has something He wants me to learn. And you know, the way He teaches me might be 180 degrees different from the way He's teaching you. But He's still trying to teach. That brings a question back for myself. Am I learning? Or am I just struggling? You know, it's easy to wish there wouldn't have to be a struggle. But you know, without struggle, there is no life. We could find many instances of that. Just take birth. Take a butterfly coming out of cocoon. Without struggle, without pain, there's no life. And I would like to encourage us all, whatever that battle is for us, let's be real men and women of God that fight the fight of faith in accepting that God sees further, knows more, and guides more skillfully than what I or you ever can. Remember the four-year-old and the adult and the highway. You know, when we consider the will of God and how God calls, because of human limitations, this gets a bit cloudy for me at least. And I think we sort of garble our terms a bit. So let's just say this. I'm going to use this as use some illustrations here to try to help you understand. And I hope that extra hour of sleep did you some good, because I'm afraid I'm not. I wish I could say some of this more clearly. I'll do my best. But if I came and told any one of you that I have been called to start an inner city mission, I didn't know what else to use, so I just used that, okay? What would I be telling you if I would tell you that I have been called to start an inner city mission? What would you hear me say? Maybe you're totally different, but if somebody would come tell me that, let me just tell you what I think they would be saying. They would be saying that they had some vision, something down that line. I'm not sure if I should call it a vision, whatever, that they're supposed to do this. And if I were to say I was called to do it, I feel like I would have to do this to be right with God. I have to take this step. This is required of me to live for God from here on out. It's called. It's clear. So I want to ask you, following this thought a bit further, back to the passage in Jeremiah, was it God's will, was it God's call that had taken those people to Babylon? What would you say? Was it God's will for those people to be in Babylon? I would like help on that one. Yes? I think I saw at least somebody shaking their head. Does anybody else want to say no? Okay. I don't know, we got that phrase to deal with yet too. Perfect. Well, good. Thank you all. So I appreciate all of you. I mean, I'm not, please keep talking, but let's follow this through. Why were they in Babylon? They got carried away captive, we know that, but why did they get carried away captive? Punishment for what? So you have a nation, Israel, or Judah in this case, that wasn't following after God with their whole heart. God sends a foreign king to take, at this point, a percentage of the people back to Babylon. And so now they're sitting there, but they're there. And they're facing this terrible situation. And you're telling me they can't even say it was God's will for them to be there. Yet, Jeremiah just got done telling them they're supposed to be happy there. So how do you reconcile that? And that's where I think we can get a little bit twisted on this whole thing if we aren't very careful. They were in Babylon because of sin. Does it take sin to accomplish God's will? Let's say it another way. I myself am very aware of this, and I think it, again, doesn't stop. Probably goes to most of us as humans. As we relate to each other, we are prone to making mistakes. And I would take that a step further and said we can even potentially sin against each other. Can we say that if I were to sin against anyone here, which I hope by the grace of God I never do, that experience was God's will for you? Let's just take somebody that's maybe been abused in some way, shape, or form. Can we go tell them, well, that's God's will, work through it? Of course not. God tells us he's not guilty of sin. Sin is always a result of fallen man following their own choices. Always has been, always will be. But we can with full confidence say that God's will even leads through a sinful experience caused by someone else, right? I don't have to be forevermore scarred before God because of that experience. Just because those people were carried to Babylon because of sin, maybe they're even their own sin, God was now offering them and saying, you can seek me with your whole heart. You can pour out, you can call upon me and I'll be here. I'm here for you. I'm bigger than what occurred. Let's just think a little bit further on this thing of God's will and being called. So also, and I feel sort of exposed saying this, it's not really that I care, and I think I'm reconciled to this one. But in the way that I hear others saying they're called, I think I could honestly say that I have felt called that someday I would serve God in some place other than the United States of America as a missionary or something. I think I could honestly say that in the way I hear the word used and as I understand, at least if I'm understanding the way it's used. So let's say I felt called to serve God in another country, yet it appears to me, I don't see the next 30 years, of course, but it feels fairly probable that at least the opportunities I've had up to now just have not fitted into my life and what God has asked for me in other areas. So was that a call from God or wasn't it? I'm not going to answer that for now. You think about that. Further, what about this one? I may have been called by the church, which in my case I was, or others, maybe in some other situation, maybe you face something else in your life, to do something that I never in my greatest hallucinations considered. But now, unless I rebel, I'm asked to fill this position. So is that a call from God, or isn't it? I don't want to be careful here because Paul does twice refer to being called for a position. Let me just read some verses to you. You listen closely. You're welcome to look to them. First one is Romans 1, verse 1. He says this, Paul, a servant of Jesus Christ, called to be an apostle, separate unto the gospel of God. The second one is in, the other time he says that is in, I think it's 1 Corinthians 1, verse 1. I cut my first and second off accidentally there, so check second if I'm wrong. But Corinthians 1 verse 1 says, Paul, called to be an apostle of Jesus Christ through the will of God. And I'll just be honest with you, as I think of this thing of being called, I personally really don't think that God, generally, I'm not going to say never because I can't box God, but I don't think God almost never calls today, we'll call one individual to a position just by speaking to him. And so in looking at these verses, what's Paul saying? Paul, a servant of Jesus Christ, called to be an apostle, separated on the gospel of God. What's fascinating to me is how much was lost in translation. So to use some other English words in Strong's, if we look at those words, that word called actually means invited to be. It means invited to be. And if you look up the word apostle, I'm not necessarily saying that Paul is not referring to a specific position in the early church. At the same time, that word apostle means representative or ambassador. So now let's read it that way. Invited as a saint or Christian to be an ambassador or representative of Christ. Now, isn't that something that every Christian is called to be? Absolutely. Everyone sitting here this morning has that call. We can't all say we were necessarily in the way we think of being apostles. Say, I can't say I was called to be an apostle. But in the way that Paul used these words in the potential Greek meaning, he's saying, as a Christian, as a saint, as somebody that has been saved by Christ, he has invited me to be an ambassador, a representative of his. What's interesting, you can search, if you look up this word called that's used here, it's used 11 times, this is out of 2. All the rest of the times it is in a general context, very clearly a general context of being called to serve Christ, being called as a saint. And to me, dear brothers and sisters, that is God's call for everyone, is to be a saint, to be a Christian, to give themselves to the work of God. And I really think the misuse, the wrong view, if I may say that, of our view and understanding of being called has causes a fair amount of needless struggle and misunderstanding. And I think it somewhat comes from evangelical influences. And that how many of us didn't grow up to some extent reading missionary stories where one specific person had this call, I guess, as they call it, to go off all by themselves across the world and spread Christ. And you know, I'm not here this morning to judge them specifically, but I really question that. I really question that if an individual would have a call that no other Christians would back them up in. I always struggled with that in those books. You think about it. I'm not here to judge. So I'm not trying to suggest that some may be blessed with more vision. Maybe they have a heart for a certain work. But I would say, isn't it a bit different to have a heart for a certain work, to have an inclination? I was born in Paraguay, so if I was to go somewhere, my first inclination would likely be towards more of a Hispanic culture. I don't think that's per se wrong. But that's not saying that I could say that God has called me to his Hispanic culture, if I'm making sense. There's a little difference there. I think that we strengthen that maybe without realizing what we're doing. May I suggest that the way we tend to use called for a specific position in a specific place at a specific time is not the way that it was intended to be understood. May I further suggest, I think we've got a bit of a view problem when it comes to understanding how God calls. Is it possible that I may be mixed up on how God calls and why he calls? God's will and call is potentially not so much a specific position in place and time, or even experience, as it is a call to just wholly surrender, give myself to his control and follow him unreservedly in whatever life may bring. May I say that again? God's will and call is potentially not so much a specific position in place and time or even experience as it is a call to wholly surrender our all to his control and following him unreservedly in whatever life brings. So let's dig a little deeper on this thing of understanding being called. How many of you have been called to be married? You've been called to be married? So, a mix there. I probably got you gun-shy of this word by now, so my bad. I want you thinking more than that I'm saying I'm right in the way I split hairs, okay? So if your thoughts end up different, that's okay. I wouldn't say I was called to be married. I need to be careful here. But marriage was a choice that my wife and I made, right? We both chose, thankfully, that this is what we wanted, and so we went through the formalities to have a marriage. Okay, good. Now I'm going to, and I know I'm getting a bit technical, but now that I'm married, I should probably consider it my calling to be married, right? Because if I understand Bible correctly, my options are done. I'm settled there, so it's no longer changeable, negotiable. It is where it is what it is, and now it's my goal needs to be on making this thing wonderful rather than questioning it. But you know, the fact is, to say that I've been called to marriage, I couldn't do that. Because I think, if it would have been within me, I think I fell in the category of Paul, where he says better to get married than to wish you did. So maybe I don't know if I could have done this or not. But I would say before God, if I would have had the strength of character, will, whatever you want to call it, to remain single, I would have been just as pleasing to God as I am married. You agree with that? So I can't really say that was a call in the way that that word is generally used. Now that I'm in it, by all means, put my heart into it. But it wasn't like it was a right or wrong. If you doubt me, you're welcome to go. I'd like to actually maybe read some of those verses. Paul says as much in 1 Corinthians 7. You don't necessarily need to turn to it. I just wanted to read a few verses to make a point here. Because I think the broader scope, it also gives us the broader scope of how God views this. He's not talking just about marriage. Verse 18 of 1 Corinthians chapter 7, he says this. Is any man called being circumcised? So here we have the word called. Is any man called being circumcised? Let him not become uncircumcised. Is any man called, he's talking of God, in uncircumcision? Let him not become circumcised. Verse 19, circumcision is nothing and uncircumcision is nothing, but the keeping of the commandments of God. Verse 20, let every man abide in the same calling wherein he was called. In other words, it almost seems like he says, if you have a work you're doing, keep on doing it. If you're called building tents like Paul was, keep building tents. That's how I take it. Art thou called being a servant? Care not for it. But if thou mayest be made free, use it rather. For he that is called in the Lord, being a servant, is the Lord's free man. Likewise also, he that is called being free is Christ's servant. So he's saying, we're making way too big a deal out of position and out of place and time and how free or not free we are. He says, it's all one with God. Serve God and what he has for you. You are all called. We should, just to finish the marriage thing off, he says a little bit more about that in verse 27 and 28, which I'll read yet. Verse 27, art thou bound unto a wife? My case, seek not to be loosed. Art thou loosed from a wife? Seek not a wife. But and if thou marry, thou hast not sinned. And if a virgin marry, she hath not sinned. Anyways, I'll stop there. You get the point, right? He's saying it's optional. It's your choice. But once you're in the state, consider that God's call leads you through that experience. Don't, anyway. Now here's one that gets a little bit more harder to define. And since I'm up here, I'll just talk about me rather than picking on somebody else. But was I called to be a minister at this church? At first, I would have said yes, because it definitely wasn't nearly like being married, right? I had a lot of fun figuring that one out. Well, I mean, I say fun. It had its stressful moments, but you get the drift. It was something I wanted, right? I can't say that there was any pleasurable moments in that call, so that's, I think that's that first blush. That's why I would have said it was a call maybe more than the other. It's not something I chose or aspired to or wanted. But in calling it a call in the way that's used, I would like to ask you this. Would it be sin for me to ask for a release? Say that there was some family needs in my home. Say that there was personal health issues or something. Say that just for the good of the church, because of some way that I was posing an obstacle in the place I feel it would be better for me to lay down my ministry, would I be sinning? I don't think we could say that that would be sin, could we? I mean, the attitude and all that would, of course, play a big role, but per se, so can we put that on the level of call? And again, you can split that. But isn't therefore a position, even in this, something that I travel through in God's will for me, rather than necessarily a specific lifelong call in and of itself? Another one I'll just use to get you thinking on different things. Was I called to do garage doors? Which is how I pay my bills, right? So was I called to do garage doors? Again, I would have to say no. It was a choice I made. Because, again, I absolutely wouldn't feel like a sinner if I just sold my business. Go do something else. It's fine. But here's a little bit of a catch, and maybe it's easier to see here than on some of these other more technical ones. You know what I am called to do in relation to garage doors is to do my absolute best while I'm doing doors, right? That is my calling. not necessarily to do the actual thing, but to actually give myself wholly to what God has given me to do today. You know, if God would call us, and I want to be careful, and you're welcome to, but I want to promote your thoughts. I'm going to go out and flesh my thought out completely. If God would call us to a specific position, say that I would say, I have been called to be a minister at Strawberry Mennonite Church. If I would say that that was a called, not that I don't accept it as part of God's plan for me at this time, but if I would just individually say I've been called, wouldn't it become necessary for me to defend that? Because this is God's plan. I see this as God's plan for me. And I don't, from here till I die, or however you were to say that. Whereas I was really blessed by the, excuse me, just let me back up. Now, if rather than saying that I've been called necessarily to this position in a lifelong sense, if I would rather say it's God's plan and will that takes me through this position and experience, what's there left to defend? Right? If you got a problem with me and you come unbuild my house that I've built about myself, well, it's part of that experience for me that God is teaching me through. And I was struck by, I've been thinking about that thing all, and I think I've mentioned a few times, so far as being defensive, how I just don't think a Christian can be defensive. That don't say I don't struggle with it, please understand. But Steve Strite mentioned it last weekend, at least once or twice, and I should have wrote it down at the moment. The way I remember him saying is, you cannot be humble and teachable while being defensive. You remember anybody remember him saying something like that? You cannot be humble and teachable while being defensive. And I think that's the real big one of the big dangers in saying that I'm called to a specific place and position is that I become defensive of that place and position when the reality is God is just using that place and position. It may last for the most of the rest of my life. It only may last briefly after this. I don't know. But it's not mine. It's His. His call for me is to serve Him regardless of what position I'm in. Okay, so in going back to this drawing a little bit, and this is something I came up with, built, should I say, a little bit more specifically for young people who are trying to make decisions, but let's just refer to the lighthouse as the revealed will of God. And when I say the revealed will, when you see a lighthouse and you're a boat, you go anywhere but where the lighthouse is, right? And I'd like to compare the revealed will of God as being that which any Christian can totally comprehend if they're willing. Something that's without doubt, without question, the way it is. And I don't know, maybe for illustration purposes, I'll use 2 Peter 3, verse 9. It tells us, abbreviating the verse, God is not willing that any should perish, but that all should come to repentance. That's clear, right? We all understand that God doesn't want anybody to perish. He offers salvation to whosoever will may come and drink of the water of life freely. So that's the revealed will of God. There is no question, there can really be no true argument, what does God want in this area? He's told us, if we accept it. So that's revealed. Now, where this gets a bit more technical in facing everyday decisions, which sometimes are referred to as calling, which is part of what I'm trying to get you to question, is there's some other things. I've come up with seven. This could be done a lot of different ways. But one of the other things we should consider as marker lights, whether we're in God's will or not, maybe I should use a different one. First one is principles of God's word. I think this one causes, it's not God's fault, but I think this one makes more problems for some of us Christians than about any other one. I'll tell you in a minute why. Principles of God's word are the next thing that we consider. If God hasn't absolutely said in His word, and I'm going to use the thing of going on a mission field, not to lift it up or to run it down. I just need an illustration, okay? So if we look, We know that it's not God's will that any should be lost. So let's say potentially one brother reads the account of how Christ told the young ruler to sell what you have, give to the poor, and go. Or we could go to the Great Commission, go into all the world, you know. And so you have one brother that looks at that principle, and he says, what in the world am I doing in a place where there's, how many is there now? 3 or 4 other Mennonite churches within an hour's driving time. I've got no business here. I'm going to sell out and see you. And so he focuses on that principle. You have another brother that looks around, grew up in a little different setting, thinks a little different, and he's like, wow, there's a lot of needs right here in Strawberry, and for sure you get into Batesville and Cave City. And so he involves himself in the work here. Maybe he sees needs in the church where he can minister to. Maybe he reads the verse, Galatians 6:2, bear you one another burdens to fulfill the law of Christ. And he focuses on that principle, right? And you follow what I'm saying. There should be unity, but at the same time, as human beings, we just have this funny little thing of where we get a bit overwhelmed, and so we start picking probably more than we should. And before we know it, we find ourselves on different pages pretty radically sometimes because of that. And I guess my question would be, not that either or of those is wrong. The principles are constant, but in our interpretation and application of them, we end up at somewhat different points at some place. So that means that potentially you could have people that view certain principles, somewhat interpret and apply them differently, end up at radically different places in what they would say is a call. Okay, the second one I have is prayer. Do all people pray for the same thing? So as you face a decision or something, you might have one brother that say, Lord, please send me somewhere. You might have another brother that's saying, Lord, I sure want to be willing, but I'd just much rather stay here. I'm just using that as a, again, prayer. We come out according to how we are. Okay. Another one that was given to me that I've appreciated is God's word speaks. And we're not talking so much about principles now as we are of just simply going to God's word and seeing if we can get direction. But there again, if you've got one brother that has an inclination one way and one another way, guess what happens? If you go, we can both go to Psalms and start reading through, and guess what? The one's going to find a verse telling him to go, and the other one's going to find a verse telling him to stay, right? I've seen it happen anyways. I guess it does. Maybe it's just them. Okay, so one of the next steps to consider is authority. Thinking especially this could be church, parental, whatever. Now, authority is a wonderful thing, and I don't mean to run it down in any shape or form. But there again, you might have one parent that strongly says, especially if you're a married couple, you go to your parents. You might have one parent that says, no, you are needed right here. I mean, just settle down. You have another parent that says, oh, yeah, I mean, I'll support you in whatever way I can. And furthermore, authority is human, which means that it's fallible. And so even in what you get, it may not be correct. The next one I have is counsel. So there again, you go ask your friends. Christians that you admire, what should I do? I guess if you would get all these up to this point to agree 100%, you'd better never look back over your shoulders, all I can tell you, because when I start asking counsel, it's usually not that clear. So then the last two, I won't spend a lot of time, are circumstances. And here again, we interpret this different. So you might have one brother that says he's called to go do something. And so his business just doesn't sell. And you know how he interprets that is, well, the devil's putting a stumbling block in my way. I got to get rid of this thing. Just have auction and leave. And the other one says, well, God closed the door. And then the last one, I don't know, is personal inclination. And maybe that's where all this comes back to. I don't know. So if you got two people facing the same decision, and they're sort of coming out opposite sides. And it actually comes the whole way down here, and it ends up being personal inclination is the biggest determining factor on how they're interpreting all the others. Can they really say that that was God's call for them? Now, I don't want to be confusing. I want to let you with one absolute certainty that I will tell you. God has called you, he's called me, to serve him. But to stand here this morning and tell you that God has called me to a particular place or position, to me seems a bit presumptuous. I can say that God's will and call for me does continue regardless of the experience, regardless of the position that he brings into my life. God's call is much more a call of following him in all of life, through the experiences, positions of life, than it is a call to a specific place, experience, or position. So with that in mind, I'd like to read Psalm 37, and I've paraphrased some of this. I don't think most of you have recently been chased around in the desert like David was, or had other political enemies that were trying to kill you, so I tried to change a few times where he brings in enemies and make it more struggles that we face within our heart. So bear with me on that. Psalm 37, verse 1. Fret not thyself because of the struggles and temptations, neither let a lack of understanding make you doubt God. For these things are temporary like the grass. They will wither and disappear as the green herb. Verse 3. Trust in the Lord and do good. So shalt thou dwell in the land, and verily thou shalt be fed. Delight thyself also in the Lord, and he shall give thee the desires of thine heart. Remember, spiritual comes first. Verse 5, commit thy way unto the Lord. Trust also in him, and he shall bring it to pass. And he shall bring forth thy righteousness as the light, and thy judgment as the new day. Verse 7, rest in the Lord, and wait patiently for him. Fret not thyself because of the things that come in life that you do not understand. Cease from worry and forsake confusing thoughts. Fret not thyself in any wise to do evil. In other words, don't let those disturbing thoughts tempt you away from God in your thought, in your life. Verse 9, for God will make his way clear in his time to those that wait upon the Lord. They shall inherit the earth. For yet a little while, and this life and the things of this life will end, and thou shalt diligently consider all this life has brought. And yet, you know what? It'll be at an end. Verse 11, but the meek, the broken, the surrendered shall inherit the earth and shall delight themselves in the abundance of peace. I'd like to read Isaiah 55 part of it yet, if you want to turn to that. Isaiah 55, verse 1. Ho, everyone that thirsteth, come ye to the waters. He that hath no money, come buy and eat. Yea, come buy wine and milk without money and without price. Wherefore do you spend money or your energy for that which is not bread, and you labor for that which satisfieth not? Hearken diligently unto me, and eat ye that which is good, and let your soul delight itself in fatness. Verse 3, incline your ear, and come unto me, hear, and your soul shall live. I will make an everlasting covenant with you, even the sure mercies of David. Behold, I have given him for a witness to the people, a leader and a commander to the people. Behold, thou shalt call a nation that thou knowest not, and nations that knew not thee shall run unto thee because of the Lord thy God and for the Holy One of Israel, for he hath glorified thee. Seek ye the Lord while he may be found, and call upon him while he is near. Let the wicked forsake his way, and the unrighteous man his thoughts. Let him return unto the Lord, and he will have mercy upon him, and to our God, for he will abundantly pardon. For my thoughts are not your thoughts, neither are my ways your ways. Excuse me. Neither are your ways my ways, saith the Lord. For as the heavens are higher than the earth, so are my ways higher than your ways, and my thoughts than your thoughts. For as the rain cometh down, and the snow from heaven, and returneth not thither, but watereth the earth, and maketh it bring forth bud, that it may give seed to the sower, and bread to the eater, so shall my word be that goeth forth out of my mouth. It shall not return unto me void, but it shall accomplish that which I please, and shall prosper in the thing whereunto I send it. For ye shall go out with joy and be led forth with peace. The mountains and the hills shall break forth before you into singing, and all the trees of the field shall clap their hands. Instead of the thorn shall come up the fir tree, and instead of the briar shall come up the myrtle tree, and it shall be to the Lord for a name, for an everlasting sign that shall not be cut off. Dear friends, this morning, I don't know what you face totally in your life, where your battle is. But you know what? We can know that God has called us to Isaiah 55, to just come to Him, to give ourselves to Him. God's will and call is potentially not so much a specific position and place and time, or even an experience, as it is a call to wholly surrender our all to His control and follow Him unreservedly in all things of life. So I've got 4 points in doing this, as we're called to do God's will. I think the first one that comes to me is to be fully surrendered. You know, so often, at least for myself, I find myself holding back. God, I don't want to do that. God, why can't I do that? God, it just doesn't suit right now. Oh, I could go on and on. Just fully surrender. Here I am. Whatever you want to do with it. Following closely on that one is trust. Do you know what trust is? I think trust is another thing we can almost speak of flippantly, but trust is to give myself in rest, even though everything in my life cries out against that, to just rest in God. Third one I have is praise God for being God. You know, just as a 4-year-old may never understand why it's not a smart thing to go ride the trike out on the road, so I may never in this life understand why God has allowed some things He did in my life. But can I still praise Him for being bigger than I am? And the fourth is do what is before you. You know, all of us, I don't care the place, the position that you have. God has called you. And in that calling, He's given you something to do. If you look around you and you say, there's nothing for me to do, friends, it's not God's problem. You've got an eye problem. Ask Him to fix it. Then I'd like to end with a verse that I read there in Psalm 46, just the first part of verse 10. Be still and know that I am God. As you look at those words in Hebrew, to be still means to quit struggling. I think all of us know what it means to struggle, don't we? Just that thing of going on and on, this can't be, this has to change, just looking. It makes me think of a caged wild animal, just poking here, pushing there, just trying on and endlessly, trying to find some way over and around, under. To just back off, be still. Be still, relax in trust. Then the second word there, if you look up it up in Hebrew, means to consider and become aware. And you know, as long as we're pushing, as long as we're struggling, as long as we're trying to find some way out, we can't know because we're distracted. It's only as we just give up. And I don't mean give up as in, you follow me. I'm talking about giving up and surrender. Not just talking, throwing up your hands, going to commit suicide or anything. But as long as we're just poking around, trying to find some way to twist this, some way to get out of this, we can't know God. Because we're not focused on Him. Be still and know that I am God. Calm your turbulent thoughts. Quiet your fearful unrest of your soul. Consider and wonder at the greatness of God. That He, in all His greatness, could care about me. And I want to be clear here. In saying all this, I feel there is a time and a place to share our struggles with an encouraging friend. There is a time and a place to hear the testimonies of what others have done and what God has done for them. But if there's one thing lacking, dear friends, in Christian lives today, I would say it's the ability to just go off in a quiet corner and being still and knowing God. We're inundated with testimonies, with stories, with books, with videos, with endless. But unless you, in the darkest hour of your life, know what it is to go off in a dark corner and just be still and know God, I don't think you can continue that walk. Be still and know that I am God. I'd like to open your psalm books to song number 923. And in my life, I'll just say this. I've struggled with this some, especially the last couple months. I want to try again to, with God's help, to just be still and let him know be God. So if there's any of the rest of you that would like to just make that as part of your life, you're welcome to stand. Let's just sing the song prayerfully. No pressure. But if any would like to, if you've been struggling with just being still in God, just publicly, don't be scared to stand and just give yourself to God in that way.